Thank you, Nora. So this is my first time to Access. Hopefully I'll be able to make many more. I was trying to get there last year, but I was out on a trip, so I wasn't able to make it. I would have loved to have seen Victoria. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about next generation catalogs, this whole buzz. It's a great follow-up to the last talk, I think. So I just want to start out by kind of giving an idea to what this really all means. What is a next generation catalog? And I've kind of come to the terms of not really liking the phrase next generation catalog recently, because I think library catalogs still have a really bad connotation, and I think we need to move beyond the idea of a catalog and to begin to look at a research tool or a discovery tool that really allows our users to do a whole lot more than just find what's on page 57, to really kind of begin to learn about what opportunities are there. If you really think about the mindset of a freshman coming to an academic library and not having a clue as to what is in the library, they don't know that your collection, because you're a research university, is heavily weighted in a certain area. They have no clue as to what's there. And I think the big problem here is traditionally librarians view things as known item searches. We know what's in our library. We know what we have. And we know that if I do this really wild, crazy search, I'll find it exactly. But our users don't know the really wild, crazy search phrases and search terms. They don't know the Library of Congress subject headings by heart. And they don't know what's in the library catalog. So we need to be able to give them a device that allows them to learn, to browse, to share their findings with others, to really begin to use that as their home place for doing searches. I think that, something that users are really focusing on is using things like Google that was just mentioned, Amazon, Delicious. We all know these resources. And we hear time and time again of people going to these sites to do their discovery, to learn what's out there, to find things, to discover. And then they come back to the library catalog and look to see if the library has it. And if they don't have it, maybe they'll go to Amazon. If it's cheap enough, they'll just buy it. But that's not really what we're in the business to do. We want to be able to allow people to discover what kind of resources we have, and maybe even discover what resources are in other libraries near us, or what can be accessed. If you think about it, you might have consortial sharing with other libraries near you, but there's really no way for your users to discover that, to find those resources that may be only a mile down the road at another institution, or maybe 20 miles down the road, something that could be easily mailed or transferred somehow to you. But our users really can't find those, because there's no good discovery systems out there that allows to tie all of these collections together. So at Villanova University, we really ran into a lot of problems. The biggest problem, was kind of mentioned in the last presentation, is just really being stuck into our current OPAC and not being able to customize the look and feel. I mean, that just really drove my staff crazy, not being able to just customize it to match the library website. Why can't we have this look just like the library website? And that was a real real struggle with us. And being able to offer some of these great features, being able to tie in external content, really being able to make the searching easier was really just impossible because of the way we were tied into our product. So we thought, there's a lot of technologies out there. There's a lot of people talking about all these different systems. And I kind of had a feeling that there was a lot of good technology in the open source community that we could leverage and be able to begin to build on top of that and build a system that would allow us to take control over our data and be able to allow our users to do, what we thought was more valuable, what they're used to doing. So we began development of a system in December of 2005. Which really seems like yesterday to me, but I can't believe it's been that long. And then I presented a system that I was experimenting with and playing around with at the CodeForLib conference in Athens, Georgia, just a few months after that, in 2006, when I had begun to put something that was functional together and playing around with. So over quite a few months. We really fleshed it out, and I got quite a bit of support from my library to really continue the development efforts of this, and really focused probably a good 3 to 4 months of my time just focused on developing this sort of system. And one of our goals early on was thinking, we're not the only library in the world that has this problem. Luckily, my institution has the resources. We have a full-time software developer on staff, myself. And we realize a lot of libraries don't have that resource. So we thought that we could open source and share this. But there are universities out there, there are academic libraries, there are other libraries around the world that do have programmers on staff. And we thought, well, maybe if we open source this tool that we really want to move forward with, maybe we can get some other institutions to help us with it and begin to pool our resources together. Because I really don't think just one person can develop this type of solution. We really need to have others collaborating. Otherwise, it will really just be meet the needs of our institution, but we won't really kind of begin to see some of those other things that other institutions are thinking about, things that are out, you know, kind of outside of the box type scenario. So by being able to open source it, we were able to, you know, kind of build a community around this product and get some other interest and develop it further. And we finally got approval from our institution in July of 2006. So we had to spend about 2 months battling with the university council to do so. They wanted to make sure that the university wasn't going to get sued over something like this. And there was a few struggles, but we got through that. And July of 2006, we announced it as a fully open-sourced product. And then there was a big gap, and I don't know what happened. I think maybe I blacked out for an entire year. But, 2 years. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. It felt like maybe a six-month period to me. But at Villanova, Viewfind wasn't just only my only focus. I was working on other projects as well. And maybe around early of 2008, we were getting to the point where we could kind of see a production system. And we still had plenty of issues to work out. But actually, the National Library of Australia beat us to the punch. And they took our system and rolled it out in production in May. And we were ready to do so as well, but we felt that our librarians wanted to see a few more tweaks and a few more modifications. And we did a lot of usability studies with our students and found that we had a couple of other really good ideas that came of that. So as you might have heard in other presentations, I strongly, strongly encourage you all to spend a few moments, 20 minutes, 30 minutes with your students. What we did is we sent our librarians out with laptops, and we sent them to the student center, and around lunchtime said, "Look, we'll buy you lunch if you spend 20 minutes with us." It was, you know, really, really was incredible results. It's not difficult to do. We bought a little webcam that clips onto the laptop, and we were able to record, you know, what they were doing, and we just showed them the website and had them play with it, and we were really able to learn a lot of feedback. So I highly suggest it, highly encourage it. Even if you're not evaluating other solutions, just have them look at your website just to really kind of sit down with them on a non-research transaction, just kind of get to talk with students. You'll really begin to learn some great feedback about how they view the library and how they view using the library. And so during that summer of 2008, we began to see a lot of other institutions adopt it. The College of William and Mary in Virginia, Wayne Graham, jumped on board real quick, and he became the second committer to Viewfind, and he's been developing a lot of underlying enhancements, which has been incredible. We've gotten a lot of patches from other institutions, which has really been helpful, and really just seeing what the National Library of Australia has done with Viewfind has also been a big help, too. And then we launched our system in August of 2008, right before the beginning of this current semester. So we've been live at Villanova for 2 months now. And as I've answered a couple of people's questions at the conference so far, we haven't heard one thing about it. So I'm going to take that as really good feedback. Because, you know, if students don't like it or if faculty don't like it, they'll be the first, and they won't be shy to tell you that. And we really haven't heard any feedback. So I think we've done a really good job of tightly integrating the catalog in with our library website. And I really don't think that users are really realizing that it's this whole other system. They're really viewing it as one entity, which is what our goal was from the outset. I already kind of reviewed that. So one of the things that we did was we evaluated our students at the university, how they use the actual space, the library itself. And we did a survey, and we had, at the time when we did the survey, it was about 2 years ago, we had a circulation desk on the first floor of our main library, an information desk, a media checkout desk, and a reference desk. So we had four points of service on the first floor of our main library. And the main conclusion that came of our survey about how the students use it and how they would prefer it is to have a one-stop shop model. They want to go to one desk and be able to answer all of their questions, take care of everything that they need to by going to one desk. And that's something that we've implemented. We took down all the desks, and we combined the information desk and the circulation desk into one large desk. And all of our transactions happen there. And I think we've seen some good success with that. And one of our goals with ViewFind was to kind of implement that same model. If you are familiar with most library websites now, the library homepage looks one way. Then maybe when you click into the library webpages, it looks a different way. And then you click over to the library catalog, and yet again, it looks like something different. Then maybe you go off to the digital collections, and yet again, it has a new interface. And then you click over to the institutional repository, and yet again, another interface. And then you go over to the databases where all the articles are, and yet again, another interface. And we're asking our students to learn an awful lot. And we're not doing a whole lot of bringing the spaces to them. And so I show this picture. This is something that I think is an awe-inspiring space, a place that I would like to have my office. But this was our institution before we did our renovation. Really drab orange carpets with lots of stains, really old 1960s wooden study carrels. So I ask you, would you rather study in this space or this space? And what we're asking our students now to do is to kind of work in a really 1960s for the web style web interface. And I think we really need to begin to rethink about how our spaces are and how our spaces look. And something my library director is working on with the entire university is to kind of restructure the building itself to be more of an awe-inspiring space, to really begin to tie in some intellectual prowess with the library. So I come back to ViewFind now. What are the things that we really want to do with this type of new space that we're going to offer to our students and to our faculty? Let's not forget those. We want to be able to not only search like we traditionally do, but browse. How many times do you hear students that say, well, my professor told me to write a paper, and we get to choose our own topic. Do you have a topic for me? You know, the topics are endless. So the idea is that I'd like to go to this kind of discovery interface and not type in something. I'd like to browse it as if I went into a Barnes & Noble or I went into a music store and just kind of browse the shelves and see if I find something that kind of grabs my eye. And also tie in things that you not normally use on a day-to-day basis with things like Amazon, Delicious, Google, all of these kind of day-to-day sites that everybody uses. Begin to have some suggestion systems. Well, you're looking at this, maybe you might also want to consider these items here. Or something we were talking about in the Hackfest was bringing in demographics. So if you're a freshman biology major, here are the top biology resources that people are looking at the past month. Here are some of the search terms that are in that arena. To help people out, to help people think about other things that maybe they're not thinking about. You know, to make their searches more effective, to be easier, to not have to type in last name, comma, first when doing an author search. And then to save the resources that they find so that when they come back tomorrow, they don't have to redo all these searches again. and to be able to share those things with fellow students, or if it's a faculty member with their students in their class, or if it's a faculty member doing research for a project with other faculty members that they're working with. And then, of course, to learn, too. I mean, believe it or not, we can make these interfaces that might also have some instructional content in it, too, and might have some, as I think was mentioned in a previous lecture yesterday, possibly, about finding the gems. You know, we can include the gems right in the library catalog, this discovery interface. We can begin to tie in this intellectual content right in with it. There's a lot of these mashups that we can do. There's a lot of content out there that we can tie in. And, you know, we're sitting through all these presentations and you hear the word API over and over again. APIs are becoming really, really popular now. And you can begin to tie these things in with the system with not a whole lot of work. So as I mentioned, the idea is that with ViewFind, what we want to be able to accomplish is to be able to develop one single interface to all the library's resources, to eliminate the silos, as everybody says over and over again. You know, the library website, we could even incorporate that content in there too. So when somebody goes to the library discovery tool, they type in the word ILL, and maybe it takes them to the page on how to use the ILL system, what the policies are, because that can be a resource too. We get over and over again, how do I access the New York Times online? Believe it or not, I thought it was really easy. You just go to nyt.com, but apparently people are struggling with that. But one of the things that we've done with, and I'll demo this a little bit in just a little bit, you know, when you do a search, you can say, when somebody types in New York Times, we can point them right to the New York Times. We can really begin to leverage a lot of these things that are out there and make it a lot easier for people. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the book titled Don't Make Me Think. Stephen Krug, I believe his name is. So tie in all these resources together. Don't make them think about, oh, well, I really wanted this resource, so I have to go to over to this web page and click here and do this. And if we can really make it a lot easier for everybody, you'll begin to see a lot more prosperity coming from that. The other thing that ViewFind or a resource discovery tool needs to do is integrate directly with the ILS. Be able to work with the ILS system, because we're not asking you to migrate to another ILS system. You know, I think a discovery interface tool like this is really a great tool for libraries who want to stay with their current ILS, who kind of fear the migration, who aren't quite ready for a migration. This is a great easy way to kind of allow to have these extended resources for your user. So we want to be able to integrate with the ILS, so we've offered things like LDAP authentication, SIP2 authentication mechanisms, so that, you know, you can authenticate the user against your existing authentication systems. We can bring in the live status, this was mentioned in the last presentation, bringing in the live status so that when a user does do a search and that item is in the catalog, we'll be able to know right at that very moment if it's checked in or checked out. Because indexing that data on a 2-hour delay, on a 5-hour delay, I don't think that's very acceptable. Because if a user finds a resource that they really need, it's a perfect fit for them, and the library catalog says it's available, and they go to check it out, and they found out that somebody checked it out 2 hours ago, would be nothing but total frustration. So we need to have that live status information. We need to work directly with the ILS to get that. The holdings data as well. Holdings changes commonly. Things get put on reserve. Things move from time to time. So display all that information on a live status. And then the idea of making this an open source system is to be able to work with all of the major ILS systems too, because we don't know what every other library out there is using. So being able to interoperate with all the different systems out there is a key to success for a type of project like this. So because this is a technical conference, I'll put up something technical on here. This is kind of the structure. It's an old slide, so some of it's a little bit out of date. But the idea is that we're integrating with all of these other silos and putting an interface to one. And then we can have multiple interfaces. We could have an OAI server sitting on top of it so that you could harvest all of our content from one single entry. Of course, the web interface, we're looking at a mobile interface so that you can use it easier on something like an iPhone or a BlackBerry device. Our university, every student gets a laptop included with their tuition, but the nursing students get a little Palm Pilot because that's commonly what's going on in the nursing world. So it would be great if, you know, they could continue to use their Palm Pilot and access the library resources from there. So being able to have a multitude of interfaces kind of funneling into, you know, the one system, which is ViewFind, and then funneling back out to all the different disparate systems, tying them all together. And that's kind of the goal of ViewFind. So the question everybody asks is, how do you get your data into a system like this? Because we are not interacting with the ILS Live to do searches against it. ViewFind is implementing technology like Solr, which everybody has heard of, and I'm sure everybody's kind of familiar with the idea of it. It's basically an index with a lot of bells and whistles on top of it. And so what we're doing is we're asking you to export your content from the library catalog and sucking that into the ViewFind system. And so right now what we have is a project called Solr Mark, which initially we had developed an importing tool for Mark content, and that's kind of gone and been expanded by members of the ViewFind community. And now we're working directly with the University of Virginia, the College of William & Mary, and Villanova itself. The three of us have kind of partnered up and built this tool called Solr Mark. So if any of you are interested in getting Mark data into a Solr index of any fashion, I highly suggest you take a look at it. I put the URL there. It's on Google Code. If you do Google Code and Solr Mark, you'll find it. And the idea is that it's a Java tool that you feed it a binary Mark file, and it will read all the content and put it right into Solr for you. And it has a nice mapping mechanism, so you can map any Mark field to any Solr field, and you can map a whole collection of Mark fields to one Solr field. It's very, very flexible and allows you to do quite a bit with that. So anybody who's interested, I highly suggest to take a look at that. And it has its own separate community. It's its own separate project. So there's a mailing list for that you can join and interact with people who are using it. And then we're also looking at other ways of importing data. You know, many of us might have a DSpace repository or something along those lines of Fedora implementation. So being able to point it right to the OAI server that's built in with one of those and sucking down your DSpace content right into the repository is something that we're looking at doing, maybe even bringing in content from other Z3950 services and things like that. So we want to be able to make it easier and easier for you to load your other content, all these different systems that you manage, being able to bring those into ViewFind as well. So I don't want to bore you to death. We've been sitting through lots and lots of slideware. So I'd really like to just kind of spend some time doing some demonstrations, showing you how ViewFind works. And I'd like to leave plenty of time for questions so you can ask. So bear with me with a moment. How many of you have looked at the ViewFind demo, have played with it, clicked around? Okay, maybe about a third of the room, so this will be good. So if you go to viewfind.org, there's a big green button on the webpage that launches you into a live demo. It is actually a snapshot of Villanova University's catalog, and we have about 850,000 bibliographic records in there. So feel free to play around with it to your heart's content. Show it to other friends at your library. Get some feedback. There's a lot of additional information, documentation on how to install the software and everything on the viewfind.org website. We have a wiki there. We have a couple of mailing lists that you can join and interact with the community who's using it. We have a list of sites that have allowed me to publish their site who are using it. We hope to get Western Michigan up there. So you can poke around at other sites. You can take a look at the National Library of Australia's implementation. You can take a look at Georgia Tech has a beta implementation up. You can kind of take a look at and see what they've done and use their data if you like. But I'll start out with just a basic search here, something that I like to demonstrate because it shows some really interesting topics to talk about. One of the things that we've done with ViewFind is leverage Solr's technology to do synonyms. So what we've done, just as an example, is built synonyms for 1 through 5. So if a user types in TWO, the number 2, or II, it will all find the same thing. And that's just a feature. You can build as many synonyms as you want. Some examples might be American English versus Canadian English versus British English, C-O-L-O-R, could be a synonym for C-O-L-O-U-R or things like that. So you can really begin to flesh that out based on your user base, however you like to. So I just did a search for World War II, and you'll see the top search result does have the actual T-W-O in it because exact matches pop higher up in the relevancy. But you'll notice a lot of the others are just World War II. But we also found 390,000 records, which is an awful lot. So one of the things that ViewFind does in terms of its searching mechanism, we tried to follow along with Google as much as possible in the way that we think that they do their searching. So what ViewFind does first is it does an anded search first, and then it does an ORed search. So it ands the words together first and then does an ORed search. Because the idea with discovery is we don't want to narrow anything out of the list. We don't want to lose out on that hidden gem that might not come up in an anded search, but you might find in an ORed search. So maybe if you kind of use some very generic terms like world and war, you're going to find a lot of results first. One of the other things you can do is you can put your search results in your search terms in quotes, and that will really narrow down the search results. But at this point now, we can then begin to leverage the facets, which is located on the right. And we're kind of... I've read some information about how users generally use the web in this way of search and refine. They'll do a search first, and they'll type in some blanket search because they don't really know, you know, what's going to come up when they do this search. So they'll do kind of like a blanket search term. And then they'll get this huge search of, you know, this huge massive results back. And then they'll kind of take a look at that and say, oh, you know, I need to revise my search. What this allows users to do is, without having to go back and, you know, come up with a new search phrase, is they can begin to leverage the facets, which is located over here on the right. And I can begin to narrow down my search terms. Something that always shows a lot of interest whenever I demonstrate ViewFind to people is the author facet. So I did a search for World War II, but if you look at the authors up there, I don't know how many of you can see it. Let's see if I zoom in real quick. William Shakespeare's in there. My guess is he wasn't writing about World War II. Daniel Defoe. This is an interesting point of, and something that I would like to put some more research time into. When doing a really blanket search like this, most likely author, because there's so many unique authors in a library catalog, author's not going to be a very good facet to start out with when you have 390,000 records. Most likely, in most of our catalogs, William Shakespeare is going to pop up to the top because we have a million different copies of every single one of his published works. So we have a lot of William Shakespeare in our catalogs. And so that's not really going to be a very useful facet. So we need to begin to think about, in the future, how we can kind of maybe dynamically reorganize the facets based on what type of searching you're doing. However, a topic would be a really great facet to utilize here. As you'll see, World War 1939 and 1945 is listed there, so I can choose that and immediately narrow down my search results to the subject heading of World War II and begin to find things. I have the option of narrowing down to a specific institution or a library format. So if I wanted to find an ebook or a kit, I'm learning all the Marx stuff. So does anybody really know what a kit is? We can narrow down by the call number range. So some institutions that are playing with ViewFind are working on a Dewey Decimal type similar system for that if you're a Dewey library. But you can narrow down on the call number range. So I can click down to the D's, World History. And one of the things that we've done with our faceting in the call numbers is built that hierarchically. So once I click on the D range for the call numbers, you'll then see I then have another layer to work below that. So maybe I'm really looking for World War II stuff about Great Britain. So then I can click on the DA. And I can continue to drill down further. And now I'm in the DA, and we don't have all of them translated at this point. That'll take some time, but if you're really savvy on the call number system, maybe some of this might make sense to you. I know nothing about the DA section, so I have no idea what any of that means. I only know the QA76 section, so I'm sure most of us know the QA76 very well. So we have topic, author, language, era, region that you can narrow down your search results. And the facets are completely configurable in ViewFind. So you can choose other fields that you want to include in your facets. You can remove facets. One thing that might be helpful is if you have a very large collection, you might want to consider, we're talking in the multi-millions of records, that you might want to consider removing author. This is something that's been found amongst many of the systems, I believe even Primo and other systems, that they've suggested taking out the author facet, because traditionally library catalogs have so many unique authors that it's very hard to facet on a huge collection of unique data. So if you're an institution that has 5-10 million records, a union catalog that has 20 million records, might want to consider removing the author facet. Okay, so that's our general search. I'm just going to zoom out a little bit here. To kind of do a better demonstration of the narrowing, I'll do something, do a quick search. Presidential election. Presidential election is going to give us a lot of stuff. It's going to give us history. It's going to give us current stuff. It's going to give us about what various countries. So, you know, maybe I'm a political science student right now, and I kind of want to write a paper on the presidential election that's going on in the U.S. So maybe I want to narrow my call number range to the political science section. But I'm really interested in the current U.S. presidential election, so I can narrow by region and get stuff that's written about the United States presidential election. And then we're going to begin to see some historical stuff in there, too. So I want to weed out the historical stuff. And so I can choose time frames. And this is something else that we really want to enhance, too, because we find that the era in the MARC records are really kind of don't follow a standard scheme. We'd like to be able to build centuries and then decades and be able to kind of drill down much like the call number system. But I could pick 2001 on, maybe. I did this just the other day. So okay. So opportunity 08, independent ideas for America's next president. So maybe I'm going to start to see stuff that's relevant to the 2008. Here we go. Now that I've narrowed it to 2001 on, now I see a 2008. And I see that we have five books that match that. So we have Condi versus Hillary. So maybe these fit exactly what I'm looking for. And I really started out with a very basic search term that, you know, your user probably doesn't think is a very basic search term. They think presidential election. Well, of course, you know, the first thing that's going to come up is a book on McCain or Barack Obama. But to them, they're kind of thinking that the system is thinking what they're thinking, which, of course, you know, we all know it's not. So being able to narrow down with the facets really quickly shows that, I think. Some of the other features that you'll see within ViewFind, I'll highlight this here. These three sections here with every record, that's brought in through AJAX. So that's a live query against your ILS. If I reload the page, if you look at that section, you'll see it kind of flash. It was too fast. But what it's doing is, first, what ViewFind does is it brings back the search results and prints that out to the screen. Then by enhancing the interface with some AJAX technology, we're able to then later on query the ILS directly and bring back status information, the call number, where it's physically located. Some ILSs, you know, depending on times of usage, depending on brand of ILS, might be slower or faster, and we really don't want that to affect the quality of the search results. We don't want our search results to slow down because our ILS is getting hammered right now because it's finals time and people are checking out constantly and things are running really slow. I still want to be able to get to my search results and see all that content. So the enhanced content with the ILS and stuff, that's brought in through AJAX. So once when ViewFind gets that response, it'll display it, but it won't hold you up from your searching. And we kind of use some of that techniques throughout ViewFind. You'll notice the same thing with the facets on the right. You'll see that it kind of flashed there and came in a second later. Sometimes facets might take a second or two to generate based on what type of query you're doing. And so we don't want to slow down the results. We don't want to slow down anybody being able to access those search results if they're not focused on the facets there. They can just drill right into their record. So with that said, let me load up a record here, and you can kind of see what we're doing with records. again, with what I was talking about earlier, is being able to tie in things like similar items, some suggestions. So you'll see over on the right-hand corner there some suggestions. We've devised an algorithm that will try and get the top five closest items in the library catalog to the current record that you're looking at. So you'll be able to see similar items. It'll kind of give you some suggestions. You're seeing a lot of the stuff is related to Hillary Clinton. Across the top here, we have some of this enhanced functionality that you don't see in your traditional OPAC type system. We have the add to favorites, where I can tag this and save it for later and come back to it on another day. I can import this record into something like RefWorks or EndNote or Zotero. And you'll notice up in the URL, Viewfind is completely integrated with Zotero, so no matter where you are, you'll always have the ability to add something to Zotero. So right here, I could click this book icon and add it to Zotero. Just real quick, if I go back to my search results, you'll see this folder icon. I can click that, and I can add any one of these items right to Zotero as well. So if anybody hasn't seen Zotero, that's kind of the premise. So we're integrated with EndNote and RefWorks. Maybe we'll take EndNote off just because they're suing our colleagues. But we can email this record. So I think this is really great for a professor. They can email this record off to their class listserv and share it with their class. From time to time, we have one big, huge, gigantic printer for our library. And we really should have multiple printers, but we just have this one huge behemoth printer. And sometimes it gets flooded and it just crashes and dies. And so we always say, well, just email the stuff to yourself. So if you just want to email this record to yourself and maybe print it out or something like that, or you know, you're in the library and then you want to go back to your dorm room or whatever and continue doing your research, you can kind of save it that way if you're not the type of person who wants to add to favorites. Of course, you can still even just tag this and add it right to Delicious or something like that. But being able to have all of these different avenues based on your preference is available. Of course, we can text this, which is, I think, a great feature. Speaking of eating your own dog food, I used this feature just the other day to find a book that I wanted to check out for the plane flight out here. I checked out a book on developing open source software from the library catalog. I texted the record to my cell phone. It had the location of the record. It had the call number and everything. I didn't need to scratch down on a piece of paper. I went up to the fourth floor where the QA76 section is. That's the only section I know. And I found my book, all with using my cell phone, which I thought was pretty neat. And then we have a little pop-up citation system, which gives you APA and MLA citation to the best of our ability, we think. I haven't seen a perfect citation system yet. So again, if I click text this, I get a little pop-up window. I type in my cell phone number, I choose my carrier, and it will text my cell phone. When adding to favorites, one of the things that we've thought about is there was a great talk, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, the time's flying by, about tagging and building the collective mass, which is very difficult for an institution, especially a medium-sized institution in the United States like Villanova. How do we build that collective mass? And our approach to that was many systems you'll see, like in Amazon added the tagging functionality. I don't know about you, but I don't have the desire to just go through on my spare time and tag books in Amazon. And I imagine most of our students on a Friday afternoon are not going to go into the library catalog and just start tagging things randomly. But we have that functionality there, so you can go ahead and just place a tag. But the idea of what we've done is mimicked the model of Delicious. That tagging, the purpose of tagging is really for organizing your favorites. So when I add this item to my favorite, and anybody who wants to use the Viewfind demo, the username and password is guest and guest, and I already have it pre-populated, so you can use the guest account, you can create your own account. All right, we'll just ignore that. Firefox 3 is choking on that. So when you add the record to your favorites, you'll be asked to add a tag and add some notes. You can leave those blank if you so choose, if you're not interested in it. But you could tag it. And what that does is that helps you kind of control and organize your own your own favorites, just like a model of delicious. And then those tags that you're using for your own self then gets populated into the global scope, and you'll see them appear down here where we show the top five tags for each record. So, you know, a lot of systems you'll see will just ask the user to just randomly tag it for no benefit of them other than thinking that it's a fun thing to do. But our tagging system has kind of leveraged the usefulness of tagging and helping it to organize your own favorites. So that's been our approach to kind of help populate the system a bit faster. And I'm going to switch over to... I've got a few more minutes. I just want to switch over to our implementation at Villanova. We've done some minor customization to the interface, and I just want to show you how easy something like that is to do. So if you want to have a look at our implementation, it's library.villanova.edu/find with a capital F. You can click on the catalog tab on the upper right-hand corner if you go to the library website. So this is our homepage. We kind of added a little cool little JavaScript thing, little animation. I can begin to browse the catalog if I so chose. If I just wanted to see what we have in political science, I could click that. One of the things we've also done is with our implementation is we've built in syndetics content. So I can do a quick little demonstration of that. So see the book covers. What we're doing is we're querying syndetics, and if they don't have the cover image, we're also querying Amazon. Library thing just announced that they have open sourced or released their covers as well. So we're kind of querying all three. So if it doesn't have it in one, it goes to the next, goes to the next, goes to the next. And that's all functionality that's built into ViewFind. That's not custom local stuff that we've done. So if I click on a record here, I can, I think it's this one that has an excerpt. Nope, this one doesn't have an excerpt. Yeah. So we've tied in syndetics book reviews, so we can get, this is kind of along the model of what I was talking about, is you can kind of bring in this external academic content as well, and the user can actually kind of do some learning at this point. So we've brought in external content, and again, this functionality is all built into the ViewFind source code. Let me just real quick show my favorites. So when I log into my library account here, you'll see the books that I've added to my favorites and tagged, and you'll see here the tags that I've used. And you'll see the tags that I've used listed over here for each record and a little note. So I left myself a little note here. Check this item out. So this is the book that I checked out for the plane right out here. And you'll see that this item is checked out and due back in January on the holdings information there. One other thing that I quickly negated to show on the ViewFind demo site, we don't have it activated at our implementation. Is stuff related to authors. So if I do an author search, one of the things that happens that's kind of different from all the other searching capability in ViewFind is when you do an author search, and this is a request that came directly from the Villanova librarians, is we get a little pop-up box there before the search results that shows you all of the matching authors in our library catalog. So if I do a search for Shakespeare, this is kind of to get the users accustomed to knowing that, you know, there's more than one Michael Jackson out there, or you know, which is kind of funny. We actually have quite a few authors in our library catalog named Michael Jackson. They're all different people, which is fun. But if I do a click on William Shakespeare, we bring in Wikipedia content on an author, so I can begin to learn about who this author is. So if I'm asked for a class to write a book about a specific author or something like that, maybe summarize some of his books or something like that, you know, I don't have to go off to another site. We're bringing in content right into the library portal. So it's all there. I can begin to learn about this person right then and there without having to even go anywhere. And then I can see the books that we have by that author. We have 1,300 items by this one author. And I can, again, you'll see the search results always look the same no matter where you are. So I can always add them to my favorites. I can always get information about those records right then and there. I can also see related subjects to this author. So I can see in the library catalog what other subjects, what Library of Congress subject headings are related to this author. So I can, you know, click on one of those and begin to explore and find other things that might maybe similar books to books that William Shakespeare has written. And then I'll just demonstrate real quick one last feature as I'm running out of time and I want to leave time for questions. And this is our experimental system. We call it our library browse system. And this is something that we're trying to figure out how to do. You know, how does one find items without ever typing in anything in the catalog? And so we want to just create a click style interface to the library catalog. So we tried to mimic an iTunes iPod style interface of navigating through a hierarchy because, you know, library content is in a hierarchical fashion. So one of my last classes in my master program was a class on corporate strategy in China and globalization. So I was asked to write a report on globalization from the Chinese perspective. So first, probably I want to start by finding a topic. Well, what am I going to write my paper on, right? It's that freshman 2 weeks into my freshman year, and I have to write a paper, and I have no idea. So I want to find a topic. And, well, my class is focused on China, so I want to narrow my topics by a region. You know, maybe it's a classical class that I'm taking, a classics, so maybe I wanted to narrow my topics by era. Maybe by genre, or just look at them by alphabetical listing. So again, my course was really focused on globalization from the Chinese perspective, so I'm going to click China. And now I can begin to see all of the topics that narrowed down by a specific region. And so now I can begin to say, okay, this is where I'm going to start my research. This is where I'm going to start working on for my paper. We can look down through here, and there's a great topic, national security from China. That sounds like a great topic for my paper. So now I've found 28 records without typing in anything that are specifically about what I need for my class. And I can see here that, you know, the search results that came up are pretty accurate. Asia-Pacific security policy changes, challenges, cooperative security in Northeast Asia, the Great Wall and Empty Fortress, China's search for security. So you can see that these are probably great resources for exactly what I need. And that's just kind of one stab at it. We consider it to be experimental. We don't consider it to be a production-style feature, even though it's wrapped into the ViewFind system, because we're still looking at some of the functionality is not working all that great. And one of the other challenges is library content. We have a ton of unique content. So how do you browse through 10,000 subject heading listings? You know, how do you make sense of that? And even by narrowing down by specifically by region. Okay, so I found 3,345 items on China, but we're only showing the top 50. So there's a lot more here that I'm missing. And the idea of building a discovery interface is we don't want to hide anything from the user. We want to present everything that's possible that's relevant to what they're looking for. So the idea is, you know, maybe we need to revise this, maybe create a paging system so I can page through, but do you really want to page through 3,000 items? Maybe we need to create a fifth or a sixth column of even narrowing it down more, making this more flexible. This is right now in HTML and Ajax, maybe making it a Flash-style interface where the interface can be very flexible and flow very easily. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. And got about 5 minutes, maybe a little bit more, for questions. So I wanted to open it up for questions at this point. Yeah.
Hi, Andrew. That's good.
Great.